It is an honor and a privilege to be back here again. I'm so happy to see everybody, and I'm so happy to be here. It is a joy every time I come here. And I would especially like to thank Catherine, because music in Unitarian churches tends to be very European and very white. And I love the fact that we've become a little less European and a little less white, at least in our music today. Awesome. I ain't dissing. I mean, I love European music, but, you know, a nice change every now and then. It was either Plato or Socrates, you can argue about who said that an unexamined life is not worth living. And there's a whole sermon in that, I'll argue with that, but the point of what they were trying to say was, you can't just rote go through life. And I would add that you literally can't, like, you can't. It's impossible for you to just do what other people say all the time. And then there's an ancient Chinese proverb that says that the journey of 1,000 miles starts with the first step, right? So we're going to kind of mush those two together today, and we're going to talk about examining what's right here in front of us. We're going to look at what is the core of our faith. What is that something that many people feel to be the core of our faith? And that is that the way we behave together is an undeniable part of what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist. Many of you have probably gone to church here for years, and you know people, and you can look down the pew, and you don't know what these people believe from a faith position. You don't know if they're atheists. You don't know if they're Christian. You don't know, because that's not a fundamental part of what it means to be a Unitarian Universalist. Now, I'm sure you know for some people, but that's just not a thing that we focus on in this church. So if the way we behave together is an undeniable part of what it means to be Unitarian Universalist, then what is our guide for how we behave together? And the closest thing we have, we're not big on guides, and the closest thing we have to a guide is the seven principles, right? That's why we read them at the beginning of the service. So, do you know when the seven principles were originally written? Some of you I know know, but you don't cheat. It was thousands of years ago, right? It's 1961. 1961. The original principles were written in 1961. Do you know when the principles we just read, these are not the original principles. Do you know when the original principles we just read were written? 1985. Like, Matlock had already been canceled, right? I mean, this is not long ago. So let me read. So it was 25 years of grief between the original writing in 1961 and the edit in 1985. And who led us out of that 25 years of grief was women. And let me explain to you why women led us out of that grief by reading a few tidbits from the original principles. There were only six of them, but here are some of the nuggets. How about to affirm, defend, and promote the dignity of man? Oops! To implement a vision of one world founded on the ideals of brotherhood. Oops! To encourage cooperation with men of goodwill in every land. You feeling why the women led us out of it? And then here's one that I think, this shows you how different we were just a few short years ago. To cherish and spread the universal truths immemorially summarized in the Judeo-Christian heritage. That was us not long ago, right? So you can see how we've changed. And it was largely women who led us out of the principal's dark ages, I guess, if you want to call them that. So as a community of faith, there's a conflict going on here, right? So we believe, we tend to, like what I said earlier, everybody sort of went, okay, right? What is an undeniable part of being a Unitarian Universalist is how we behave together. Nobody would object to that, right? That makes sense to just about everybody. But there are some people in our congregation, there are some people here right now for whom that's not enough, that doesn't get them there. So there's a conflict that happens between two opposites, and let me bring those two opposites to you. Is the community the source of our faith, or is faith the source of our community? Right? This is a conflict, and I'm going to tell you right now that we've struggled with this conflict for a long time. And I'm going to read 5 quotes from famous Unitarians and Universalists and Unitarian Universalists that will sort of show you that will sort of struggle, that will demonstrate this struggle. But right now, I'm going to demonstrate it right from the front cover of your order of service. I'm going to show you the conflict. I don't want to say conflict. I keep using that word. I don't mean conflict. Tension. I'm going to show you the tension in the principles that many of you might not have ever seen. This part of the sermon could be called Things That Drive Me Crazy, right? But that's okay. And then soon they will also drive you crazy. So there, I have accomplished my goal. So the inherent worth and dignity of every person, really hard to argue with, right? Okay. Until somebody does something bad, but that's all right. That's a different thing. So let's look at the second one. Justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Nobody has any problem with justice. Nobody has any problem with equality, equity. But compassion is not justice or equity. Compassion is going beyond justice and equity to even things out somehow, or to add something that maybe not even merited to someone who is lacking something, right? That's what compassion is. So right there, there's a little conflict right there. So should we be just, equity, or should we be compassionate? Which one? I love this one. This one is like from the very first day I went to a Unitarian Universalist church, this one sort of went, what do they mean by that? Acceptance of one another. Who can argue about that, right? Acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth. That always came off to me as, we love you, but you really should work on this. Right? How about a free and responsible search for truth and meaning? Responsible to what? If it's free, how can it also be responsible? I know what they mean, but those two things they're butting up against each other, aren't they? Oh, here's a good one. This one. Whew. The right of conscience and the use of the democratic process. Well, what is it? Is it conscience or is it the democratic process? If you all vote on something that I disagree with, am I supposed to just go, oh, okay? Or am I supposed to live my conscience? What is it? How about the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all? Have you ever been in a community of more than 2 people that was peace, justice, and liberty for all? How about the goal of world community where we're at least not bad to each other? How about that? And then the last one is really just a language thing, and I'm being picky, but respect for the independent web of all existence, right? But then we have to say it again. Of which we are a part. So if it's all existence, why do we have to say that we're a part of it? It's almost like we have to make sure that we get that in there, right? And that might be a pushback on the Judeo-Christian tradition of that puts humans above the rest of existence, right? So it's trying to bring us back in, but that one's always been a cute one for me. So there's an example of tension, and I'll bet you that a lot of you never even saw that tension, because these are not objectionable things, right? These are all wonderful things. And the tension is not bad. I'm going to get into that in a minute. So at one end, you've got our humanity is the result of our community. Our faith is the result of our community, right? And at the other end, you've got community is the result of our faith. So what is the underlying? What is the foundation? What is the capstone? Let's split the seven principles up in these two, looking at these two ways. So humanity is a result of our community. The inherent worth and dignity, that's humanity is the result, right? Justice, equity, and compassion, that is definitely all about being together. Humanity comes from our community. Now in the third principle, we're going to split that one up. The encouragement to spiritual growth, that is humanity coming out of our community, right? We're encouraging each other to grow, and we're doing that together. The use of the democratic process, that is definitely community being the foundation and humanity being the capstone, humanity being the result of community. And then peace, liberty, and justice for all, of course. All right. Now, which pieces of our seven principles illustrate the different paradigm, the paradigm where humanity is the source of community? In other words, humanity is the foundation and the community is the capstone. The inherent worth and dignity sort of says that we all start out the same, right? Justice, equity, and compassion turns into I deserve no more than anyone else. And I have the wrong notes, and I'm sorry. Acceptance of one another, that is a personal thing. I have to do that myself. That's humanity leading to community. A free response for search and meaning, that is humanity leading to community. Conscience, rather than the democratic process, conscience is what spurs the democratic process. Conscience is what brings us to the democratic process. Okay. Now I have three quotes from three famous Unitarian, one Universalist, and one Unitarian Universalist that sort of spread this out, okay? So over here, we've got community being the foundation of faith. Faith comes out of community. Humanity comes out of community. And what would that look like? Well, this is a quote from a book written by a woman named Alice Blair Wesley, who was a famous Unitarian Universalist minister. The book was called The Myth of Time and History. And she tells the story of John Robertson, an English minister from 1607, long time ago. Robinson went on, and he ended up forming what was called the American Free Church, which ended up merging into the Universalist Church. So here's what Robinson said. This is what Alice Blair Wesley said about Robinson. In Robinson's conception, the church was to be constituted not by obedience to a hierarchical authority, not by assent to a creed, we all agree on that, right? And not by confession of some transforming experience. The church was to be constituted by a promise, a covenant venture together as individuals in the way of the Spirit and with integrity. So here we have community being the most important part of church. Okay? That's a very typical example of that. Now we're going to fast forward a little bit, and we're going to move a little bit down the spectrum. So here we have James Luther Adams, who many of you have studied in the past, right? Here James Luther Adams strikes a balance. In his book, The Prophethood of All Believers, which was published in 1986, he died in 1994, so this is not that old. Listen for the movement toward the transpersonal forming the foundation of covenant. He says, traditionally, our churches have been grounded in a covenant binding us together. But this experience of maintaining the network is itself not to be understood as simply a human enterprise. It is a response to a divinely given creative power, a sustaining power, a community transforming power. This power is not ultimately of our own making. So can you feel the balance here? He brings God into this right now. So faith and humanity being a balancing point between community. And now we're going to go way over here. And over here, we have the idea of our covenant being just the result of something greater. The result of faith, the result of humanity, or as James Luther Adams called it, as a result of the source, which is sort of his word for God-ish. Whatever we're calling God these days, right? Okay, now we're all the way over to here, and covenant is the capstone. And this came from Rebecca Parker's sermon essay, What They Dreamed Be Ours to Do, which is one of my favorite readings in all of Unitarian Universalism. She's referring to the same source, that God thing that Adams was talking about. Here she says, there is room to imagine this source larger than ourselves in multiple ways. The earth, the spirit of love, Buddha, nature, the communion of all souls, universal love. She's sort of writing down how we struggle with the concept of God, right? And she says, the point is that there is a power that undergirds our covenant making that is more than the power of our will and decision making. In fact, our covenant making is a response to this power. So now, community is a result of faith. Community is a, I don't want to say byproduct, but it's a result of the faith. So you can see we've gone from community is the only thing, and faith happens to come from it, all the way over to here, where you get faith is the only thing, and community comes from it. Can you feel that tension? And that's not a long time. That's just a couple hundred years of history. Everybody following me, or did I lose you? I lost you. Okay. Let's get more recent, a little bit more recent. So here's some more two more examples of the tension. Gene Pickett, who was then the president of the UUA, in 1979, said this, just to show you where this tension lies in our faith, how it comes out, what it looks like when it does come out. The deeper malaise, this is Gene Pickett speaking, the deeper malaise lives in our confusion as to what word we have to spread. The old watchwords of liberalism and freedom and reason and tolerance, worthy as they may be, are simply not catching the imagination of the contemporary world. Does that sound familiar? They describe a process for approaching religious depths, but they testify no intimate acquaintance with the depths themselves. That's one of the things that makes people wander off from Unitarian Universalist churches. They testify no intimate acquaintance with the depths themselves. There is that tension, okay? And here is Professor David Bombaugh. This is my last of my quotes. I know this is a quote-heavy talk, but this is the last of my quotes. Professor Bombaugh delivered this address actually at my seminary. I happened to be there. I had no idea that what I was watching was important until all of a sudden it came out and out and out. So he was addressing in his retirement speech the erosion of the universalist influence in Unitarian Universalism, which he says is essentially gone. Unitarians have that way of just sort of, make, you know, subjugating everything else. If we were, and this is David Bombach, if we were to serve our people and the world in which we find ourselves, it is critical that we have the courage to define ourselves in a way that offers a clear alternative both to the dangerous and divisive orthodoxies that seem to have captured so much of the religious imagination and to the refusal to embrace a clear identity that threatens to sweep liberal religion into a commodified, thumb-sucking irrelevance. He didn't mince words. He was a very bright person. But then he says the world has a right to expect that of us. And I think he's right. The former president of the UUA, President Peter Morales, had a strong message about religion beyond belief. Does everybody remember that? Does anybody remember that? I've preached, I showed a video of him preaching. Did I not do that? His message looked at religion that just put belief behind it and focused on behavior, how we change the world, how we live in the world. He focused on how we act as humans. I thought it was brilliant. As I said, I worked it into several sermons. It inspired me. The sense of community being the source of our faith certainly is more attractive to us than the notion of faith being the source of our community, because then we'd have to agree on some sort of faith. But not everybody here sees it that way. There are people right here in our church who are looking at the source of faith, looking not at the source of faith, but the other way around, as faith as being the source of our community and the source of what we do. For these people, what is most important is not the struggle to figure out what we can agree on. It is not the struggle to figure out an operating manifesto per se, but rather finding out what we cannot possibly disagree on. Instead of looking at compromise like the 25 years-ish between 1961 and 1985, what if we as a religion were to help these people to define what is undeniably part of humanity and undeniably defining the human race's role in the cosmos? I think some of us would like that. And what if the tensions that we live and breathe in these words, in these hollowed words, these words hollowed to so many of us, were actually not errant vibrations needing in some sort of repair? I know that there are many of you out there thinking, we have to fix this, hold on. But what if these, the framing of the principles were actually acknowledgement of the of a both-and situation that exists in humanity? Both are as right and as wrong as each other. What if the tensions are part that are part of the principles shed light on undeniable aspects of the human condition? Does anybody live a tension-free life? Would some of us benefit to gain from a religion that could help us lay out the core and undeniable conditions of being human so that when they forget, those conditions are right there in front of them? I'm not saying paste it on the walls, but would that be helpful? How would a religion like that change us as individuals? How would that change our notion of, say, judgment? I'm not saying would be more judgment or less judgmental. I'm saying would it change the way we judge people? How would we behave together if the undeniable essence of humanity were always right there in front of us? Would a religion like that change the way we look at ourselves? Would it change the way we think about God or whatever we're calling God these days? if an unconsidered life is really not worth living, and the journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step, then we would begin to consider our lives with what is only one step in front of us, or quite possibly under our feet, in full view. As Professor Bombach proclaimed, the world has that right to expect that of us. And I would add that the world has a right to expect that of us collectively and individually. So as we leave this place, recognize the tension that exists in us and in us, and recognize that that tension is part of what it means to be human, and addressing things as both and rather than either or, whenever possible, can maybe shed some light into what it means to be human and what it means to be a member of a community. And with that, we say, may it be so. Amen.